Hare Krishna. There's room here. Okay, all right, I get the picture. No, if anybody's coming a little late, they usually sit in the back. I'm Bhakti Marg Swami, pretty harmless, vegetarian. I don't eat flesh, so you can trust me. Okay. So we're here tonight on this beautiful Friday night. We know that you can do a lot more than come here, but we'll try to be a little stimulating for you. Just to give a little intro, I'm a monk, and I joined the Krishna Consciousness Movement in 1973 in the spring. And I've been with it ever since. I travel around the world to do different things. One of the things I like to do is to do marathon walking, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. And I'm teacher of Bhagavad Gita, Bhakti Yoga. I sometimes do workshops on nine devotions. We like to produce and direct dramas based on Vedic themes. And that we've done, you know, many places in the world. And what else? We liked what we're doing. It's important to do what you like. Okay? So you all look very cozy over there. Are you okay? All right. So how many people are here for the first time? Just to ask. First timers. Okay. Good. How many people are second timers? Second timers. Really? Okay. How many people have been here over 108 times? Okay, so we got different groups of people. Great. And may I ask how you folks found out? Are you all together as a group? Oh, how did you find out about this place? Okay. Okay, great, great. And so your expectations are what? To hear someone talk? Oh, not even that. Okay, well then we forget about this program. Okay. All right. So, but we will talk a little bit, okay? I was asked to speak a little bit about little bit of philosophy and mix it in with some of the experiences that we've gone through personally. I don't know. You can all hear me here, but this is more for another part of the building. Can you people in the kitchen hear me? If so, bang a pot. Okay, so this is not needed. Okay, all right. Pretty intimidating. So just put it in the air for now. Okay, so we usually like to, in any of our presentations, like to open up with a mantra. Would you like to join me in a mantra?
Yes.
Okay, sit with your backs and necks and head straight in a line, nice and straight and tall, and you can put your hands out like this. I'm going to chant Om, okay? And I'll bring it up to this pitch level, Om, real soft, you know, and just relax. Hari Bol. Okay, one, two, three, go. The next word, namo, and you can elongate the second syllable. Oh, namo. One, two, three, go. Namo. The next one is slightly more complicated. That's four syllables. Bhagavate. One, two, three. Bhagavate. And a little more complicated, the last word. Vasudeva. Vaya, five syllables. Vasudevaya. One, two, three, go.
Vasudevaya.
It's very relaxing, isn't it? Okay. Let's, any those people who know this mantra will do it without any sort of breaks. You can breathe in between words. But so, okay. One, two, three, go. Oh.
Bhagavate Vasudevaya
The meaning of this verse is, I offer my respects to the creator of the world, just to put it in simple terms. Okay, so I would like to, now we're on the roll with some mantras, so let me give you another one. Okay? Dehi no smin yata dehe, komaran yauvanang jara, tata dehantara praptir, dhiras tatra namuyati. That's found in the ancient book called Bhagavad Gita, and it's in reference to the journey that we all go through. How do we travel? People think, well, I traveled to Gainesville from somewhere else. How many people are from outside of Gainesville? Okay, so quite a few of us, and we came for different reasons, for different purposes. We travel, but there's another way to look at travel, and that's expressed in this verse from Bhagavad Gita. And it said that we travel within one lifetime from when we're a baby to when we become a child to when we become a youth to some kind of fully grown adult to finally reach old age, and then we move on into another body again. That's called transmigration of the soul. So that's how we travel. Do you like looking at pictures of yourself? Come on, be honest. Okay. And especially your mom and dad like to look at pictures of yourself, you know, when you were baby pictures. You have baby pictures of yourself. Okay. And then you look at when you went to school around that time frame, and then now, you know, the way it is now, whatever period of life we're in. And we went through these different phases of physical changes, but there's something inside of us that didn't change. That's called the Atma. That's called the soul. The soul is traveling from one body to the next and to the next within one lifetime. And when we finally die, which is happens 100% of the time for everybody, we just enter into another body. Like these people are also traveling. Oh, okay. Those people are also. So people are all traveling from one existence to another, from one body to another, one species to another, and sometimes different gender changing that happens. Some people are not happy with their gender. Well, we usually say, because people have come to me about this situation, okay, why don't you just be patient? It'll come naturally. Next time around, you can be that something else. That's not always what they want to hear, so people want a quick fix. But, you know, karmically, we're meant to be where we are, and we practically put ourselves where we are. So make up your mind. Accept what is a set of circumstances that you're in, and deal with it, and get on with things after that. Because it will come to you eventually. Usually desire is followed up by, you know, materializing of what you wish to have. That's usually the way it works in this world. So everybody's got desires. We've got the fire of desire in us, isn't it? That's what brought us here, and that's what will keep us going. You know, fire fuels. And fuel keeps things burning, keeps things moving. It produces energy. So we're constantly producing energy. And with our different plans and different schemes, we move from one project to the next and to the next. And it just keeps going on like that until we adjust our, let's say, our ultimate objective. So sometimes people, they ask, you know, why do we go through this cycle? And when I came on the plane here yesterday morning, there was someone who had the novel in his hand. It's called Vicious Circle. That was the name of the novel, which is, I think, is on the top 10 list right now. And so indeed we do, according to the teachings of Bhagavad Gita, we do go through, you know, a vicious something or other. We go from birth and then death, which is followed up by birth again. Jatasihi drogo mrityur dhruvam janma mritashicha. It's another verse from Bhagavad Gita that endorses the concept of transmigration of the soul. You know, you're always traveling, moving along. So when we talk about travel and going on a journey, let's not think of it in terms of, well, going to your travel agent. It's much more exciting than that. You know? That's called transmigration of the soul. We sometimes see birds migrating. Right? Do they migrate here or they just land here? They just land right here on top of your roof. And of course, we hear about people migrating from one country to another. And there's all this travel going on, perhaps like never ever before, amongst human and other species of life. Sometimes you hear about these creatures, these creepy crawlies that they come all over your yard, you know. Sometimes you get an influx of ladybugs, or you get, you know, these like, well, there's all kinds of, you know, what do they call them? Just invasions of locusts, you know, coming and devouring. I go to one farm in British Columbia where they have this pine beetle problem, you know, and the winters haven't been cold enough to kill the larvae. So, you know, some people will be sitting in the front yard, they hear all this. That's the pine beetle just chewing away at these trees and devouring them like crazy, you know. Sometimes you just have these invasions of creatures coming in and traveling in those unique formats, you know, just moving in and almost taking over. I remember as a kid one time we were playing in the front yard of we had a pretty big yard in the countryside, and we were in a bare feet, and there was an invasion of these very big green caterpillars, the hairless ones. You ever seen them? And they were just all over the place. And, you know, we were just pretty young at that time, just kind of preschool, and we were freaking out. It was just the most incredible experience of our lives. So, you know, we have, you know, species traveling all over and going for some adventure. And at some point in time, it's understood that the Atma, the spirit within, the soul, gets a little tired of all this trying to experiment. You know, I've done everything now. Let me settle down. And settle down doesn't mean, you know, make a nest and, you know, when you fix yourself up with a partner. It's not like, it's kind of the opposite. Settling down in this context means just kind of like pulling out of this world altogether and moving on to another existence of what we call an anti-material world. A technical term is Vaikuntha, a place which is full of spirit and not of matter. It's another dimensional world. And that's what the Bhagavad Gita talks about, a place which is in no need of electricity or sunlight or moonlight. It's self-illuminating, you know, it's self-sustaining. There's happiness, there's no worry, no taxes, no tuition fees, you know, all those kind of touchy things. It's none of that kind of stuff. So we're talking about another world. And it's nice to be able to go on in life to know that there is another world if you really believe in it. Sometimes people ask, what's the proof? Well, so what is the proof? Apart from what's stated in these ancient books. Well, perhaps think about yourself. Are you of matter, or are you made of something else? I'm talking about the you in the body, not the machinery. I'm talking about the person who's observing the machinery, feeling the machinery, you know, and certainly picking up on data through the senses, and which is part of the machinery, the eyes, the nose, the mouth, the ears, the sense of touch, and so on. Where we are feeling things, we're smelling, tasting, and absorbing different sense objects. But it's all to do with material energy. There's another energy which is very, very different. And that's, that energy was what we are made up of. We are the observers of this material energy that's going in motion. We are observing. And so that's where we have to kind of draw a line and make a distinction. And very nice music. Is there a dance that goes with that? All right. So the Bhagavad Gita and the Vedas, the ancient books of India, you know, of wisdom, they state that our objective should be to explore moving on into this other existence, you know, because they confirm that we've been around here for a long time, that we have been kind of like dabbling and flirting with the material energy. And now, perhaps it's time to explore another field, another existence. And so that's what Bhagavad Gita directs itself towards. And there's different ways. People have different, let's say, offer different ways in which you can do that. But the Vedas mainly point to such things as connecting with the sound vibration, just like we opened up with chanting a mantra, right? And we just gave a little sample. But what if you to do a little bit more of that? And did you feel kind of comfortable with that one? With chanting that mantra? Was it relaxing? Was it okay? Okay. Maybe it didn't quite transfer you to another world, but maybe you're kind of getting there. So the Bhagavad Gita expresses various statements where, say, things such as japa, which is a constant repetition as being the ultimate sacrifice, that sound is important. Especially Shabda Brahman, spiritual sound, is what can help us to transport ourselves to another existence. So, in our particular tradition, we highlight that methodology very much. Chanting is very important for us. Mantras, bhajans, kirtan. It's underscored. We put a lot of emphasis in this direction of pure sound vibration. The entire Bhagavad Gita is 700 verses together. Each and any one of those, you know, if you can really understand it, will help to practically transport you to another way of feeling, another way of existing. So I just want to give a little introduction to, you know, the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. But I was asked to speak a little bit about some of the experiences that I had in my travels. And so I've been doing some marathon walking. And it all started off, and first of all, in India, there's a whole tradition about, holy people traveling in a very solitary way and just going for long distances and not really depending on, a paycheck coming in or anything like that, but just depending on the kindness of others as accepting whatever comes of its own accord, that idea. And in the native tradition, I guess maybe I'm a little more familiar with what's north of the 49th parallel, or some youthful person might go on a spiritual quest. And you have that in Australia amongst Aboriginal people. We have it in the culture of Europe. We have it in the cult. Even to this day, one of the most famous walks happens in Spain every year, the famous Santiago walk, which my understanding is that it started in the days of the Crusades. People go on this long walk, and it's a pilgrimage walk, and people come back like a different person. Because you're not like just a tourist. It's not just for sightseeing. You're going for an experience. You're going to learn simplicity, detachment. You're going to make friends. You're going to get inspired. You're in touch with the elements every day, you know, and like for many, many hours, unlike our lifestyle now where we find ourselves in boxes and cages, what we call offices and living rooms. And it should be more dead rooms. I don't know why they call it living room, because it's really It's where people seem to deteriorate more than anything. But it's, you know, being, you know, where the sky becomes your ceiling, the trees become your walls and things like that, and the ground below you is your carpet and your flooring, you know, that kind of life. And where you have the freedom to choose which tree to sleep under for taking a nap. Well, that kind of fun, you know, kind of that kind of carefree, car-free existence that happens in many places in the world. In India, it's a very, there's a big tradition of going on parikrama, pilgrimage. There's also a big tradition of that in Eastern Europe and the Russian countries, where monks have traveled. So here are some of the things that happened. I met different people who had different mystical experiences, the people I met. Like, say, for instance, one man, he pulled over, and this is in the mountains of British Columbia. He pulled over, and he said, "Do you believe in reincarnation?" And I said, "Yeah." I said, "Really? I'm glad. I want to tell you a story about me. I have these recurring dreams that I was living in a monastery. And during the Russian Revolution, I was sitting in the library, and these guys came in. They were banging open the door, you know, to the library of the monastery. They finally got in. One guy held up his gun and let it off, and that was it. I have these recurring dreams. I believe I was that monk in that monastery. Do you believe I was that?" He was testing me. He said, "I have no reason to doubt." I went to one, walked by this one lake. It's called Lake A Little Manitou. And it has the same kind of dynamics as the Dead Sea. When you go in there, you can just your legs go, "Whoa, what's going on here?" And you just float. You can just lie on the, and just read the newspaper like this if you want. Or the Bhagavatam. Whatever the case.
That's
fine when you doubt. You know, it's a high content of minerals, and so I came out of that, you know, interesting sound vibrations tonight. And so there was this lady that was there, sort of middle-aged woman, and I told her I was doing a walk across Canada, and I was just in my sort of, you know, swimwear. So I told her I was a monk, otherwise she wouldn't know. But I came out, and you turn all white, you know, because all the minerals stick to you. It's kind of really far out. And she said, "Oh, well, maybe you can answer my question for me." She said, "I have lots of children. I bore a lot of children. When I was giving birth to one child, I was very great difficulty. I had to go to the hospital, and I was being operated on. I was being assisted, and there were quite a few people in there helping. Now, I was not in my body. I was projected up into the ceiling in the corner of the room. And I was hearing everybody very clearly. And I was looking down at me. And I was looking down at all the people who were looking down at me working on my machinery." So she asked, "What's that all about?" Because I asked my local minister and priest, and they didn't know what to say. So I said, "Well, my understanding, it's like this. Sometimes when you go in your car and you know, put the key in the ignition, you turn it on, and then you let it run, you realize, oh, I forgot something, okay? Or I forgot my wallet or whatever, my purse, whatever the case may be. And so you let the engine run, you know, put it in park, and then you go out and you get it, and then you come back in, and then, you know, on your way you go." So I explained that you, who are the superior force, superior energy, left your body when you were giving birth, and you projected yourself into another plane. You were able to look down, and at some point, your machinery is still running. You're still connected to it. And at some point in time, when business was done, your spirit came back inside the bodily frame, and business as usual. And she said, Is that all there was to it? I said, yeah. I said, well, so there's other things. I'm just telling you some of the what people classify as mystical stories. I was way on the East Coast in Canada. That's one of the journeys. And right by the Atlantic coast. And there were these kids following me. They were like, there were about six of them, ranging from the age of 5 to about 11. And they were following me for a bit. And they were kind of shy, you know. And so at one point I stopped and I waited for them because I wanted to know what really is going on in their little, wonderful little magical minds, you know. And so one of the kids, the spokespersons, who happened to be one of the younger kids, said, excuse me, but we were curious about one thing. And I said, okay, what's that? Well, you're a monk, aren't you? And I said, yeah. And he said, do you walk on water? Because I was right by the water, and I guess they saw the flowing robes, you know, and, you know. So I just want to talk about some of the experiences of, you know, walking across, you know, Canada, which I did 3 times, to promote spiritual awareness, spiritual healing, and to promote the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita. And the first time I walked across Canada, I had organized a system where we could install, I got sponsors, we were installing Bhagavad Gitas in every library across the country. You know, so people could understand these ancient concepts of transmigration of the soul, things like that. And about, you know, magic words like dharma, what does it mean? What's it all about? And what's the ultimate goal of life and so on like that? What's karma? What's kala? You know, these are terms to learn, like kala means time and karma means activity and Ishvara means the creator. And so on, all these beautiful subject matters that are contained in the Bhagavad Gita. So I walked across Canada. I had a very tough year in 1995. There was some politics going on in the human society. And I decided I wanted to get away from some administrative duties. It was a little, things were piling up a little too much. And I was under the influence of dark planets, apparently. And when you are on a spiritual path, you address that. You try to adjust things so that you know how to deal with it. And everyone goes through difficult circumstances. Am I right about that? Yeah? Okay. Sometimes we go through like an 18-year period of what's called the Rahu and Ketu. Like even the word, the Rahu. It sounds bad, you know? Well, it can be bad. But for those who are on the spiritual path, it's a very good time to play a little bit low-key and to really concentrate on some of your spiritual development. You know? And so I realized I had to do that. So it was 1995 and 96. It was going to be the year of our guru's 100th year of living. So I thought, let me do something different. Let me do something in his honor. So I thought, let me do what the pilgrims did, what swamis used to do before aircraft came into play, before automobiles. Let me go not faster than the donkey, you know. One analyst, he said, human beings shouldn't travel faster than the mule. You know, anything else creates accidents. It's unhealthy. We're only meant to go a certain speed, you know. Or at best, you know, if you're running like the Zulus do in Africa, you know, in tribal times, you know, we shouldn't be going faster than that. So I thought, yeah, I like that. And I thought, I want to see the country close up. You know, I was tired of, you know, just zzz. I used to go by and see the trees and this nice, beautiful glacial stream down below. I want to be down there. I don't want to be in this automobile. I want to see things really close. I'm going to smell the forest and the trees. Somebody said, oh, before I started on the first walk, said, oh, you know, you've got to have an RV. You've got to have an RV, and you have to have a cell phone, even though they don't work in the mountains. You know? You have to have a cell phone. You have to have walkie-talkies at least. You have to have this and that. Whoa, 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 whoa! Before you go further That's not what it's about. This is an experience of simple living and maybe high thinking. Simple living. That's what it's about. And so I started off first in 96 in the spring with a support person. We get lived out of his van, and that's where we'd sleep at night because it would be kind of cold. And sometimes we'd, you know, we are always committed to taking a bath in the morning, even if there was some snow around. We always, you know, you just do things faster, that's all. That's the only difference, you know. So you go and you get your bucket, and, you know, sometimes it was hard because there's ice and snow. You find it where it's a little bit, you know, like thawed out and woo, honeymoon. And the steam rises up, you know, and you just dry yourself off real fast and just get, you know, a little bit of this, and chanting very fervently and so on. It's great. It's great in the pristine environment, you know, and your companions are the birds and the elk and the deer and the moose and the bison, you know, the buffalo, and you know that kind of. It's wonderful. It's wonderful. I had a lot of exchanges with creatures. Like we were talking about the bear encounter yesterday, didn't we mention that? But you weren't here. Okay, so you missed it, so too bad. Anyways, no. I'll tell you another bear story, which I didn't tell yesterday. There was one cyclist who came, a motorcyclist, like a Hell's Angel type guy, you know, black leather and beard and everything, kind of burly looking. And I was walking with a monk who accompanied me this third time around. We were both in the saffron clad, you know, dhoti and kurta, we call it here. And this biker, he pulls up right in front of us and says, "I'm warning you guys," with a what, you know, like some threatening words. "I'm warning you guys." This is what he clarified. And he said, "Just down the road there, there's this bear that came right after me, right after my machine. And you're going in that direction, so I'm telling you guys, you got to watch it." He says, "Oh, well, thanks. Thanks a lot." So we kept walking. And there was, we saw a bear, a black bear, eating wild strawberries. This is in northern Ontario. And I stood there, I was just so fascinated, you know, furry, black, beautiful. And my Cuban monk friend, he said, "Marsh, let's go, let's go." I said, "I think it's okay, don't worry, don't worry." So I kept staring at the bear. And the bear was a little further than you thought you were, just a little further in the ditch. And so she went up. You know how they do it? You know? They do this weird thing here. And then she went down and went like this. And so I said to my Brahmachari friend, "Now we can go." So we found there were some bridge builders, a repairman, just right nearby, a few meters away, and they told us, "Yeah, that bear's been around all morning. She's on this side of the road. Her cubs are on the other side. There are three cubs, which we've been walking, looking at all day, pretty much. And you're in the middle, so naturally." She was responding that way. But they are cute. They are. Definitely. There are days when I saw, like, you know, you could count 3-4 bears in a day. And so when you see these creatures, you get pretty charmed, and it gives you a lot of energy, a lot of power. You can go on. If you see a bear, you know, you're ready to go for another 4 or 5 hours just walking without stopping. You know, you're so pumped up. Wow. I remember also another vision of like a bull moose. This is in New Brunswick. And the sun was just coming up, and there was fog, and there's a swamp. So I turned around, and there was one guy sort of, you know, drinking and chomping at something. And he saw me, and I had it was the perfect silhouette. I mean, they're big guys. And he looked at me, and he said, "I'm going." And he stomped away, and, well, to me, it's just magic, you know. You're there, he's there, and that interaction. It's beautiful, beautiful experiences. Okay, what about people? The wildest of the wild are the people. You meet some real characters, you know. People say you got to watch the bears. I said, no, you have to watch the human beings. Well, maybe I shouldn't say I met real ruffians. Very little. I walked through a native reserve. I didn't know that it was a native reserve. You don't know. You're not from that area. And I went down to one stream to chant my noon Gayatri. There's something you do at noon where we chant mantras for some of us. So this lady who had a vehicle full of her kids and maybe her neighbor's kids too, and like kind of like what India's like, you know, in some situations, and the train. So she stopped, and she looked down at what I was doing. What are you doing? And I said, well, I'm doing a walk across Canada for the spiritual healing of the nation. What are you doing? She didn't like that. She just didn't like that answer. And because I met another native person, you know, on another occasion said, he asked, why are you walking? And they had a few drinks. Why are you walking across Canada? And I said, it's for the spiritual healing of the nation. You don't do any walking or a weight, man. You don't do any healing. We do all the spiritual healing. So, okay, all right. Okay, you got a monopoly. I'm not going to argue. I'm not going to argue with you, you know. And so anyways, this lady, she went away in a huff and a puff. She just drove off. And then a few minutes later, the police force, run by the native community, they came by. And I said, so what's going on? What's happening here, you know? I retreated back to walking on the road. Said, well, I'm just walking to promote spiritual healing in the country. And they looked at each other, the two guys, you know, almost in disbelief. And they looked at me and they went, right on. So we got all kinds of endorsements from people, you know. I had a chance to do a lot of media coverage. So I went on one live television show, and they just finished doing the news. And they don't usually have guests on there, but I was on there. I was like, and they asked me all kinds of questions. You know, so what do you do? And, you know, what are you doing this for? And I explained all these things. And then the moderator said, so I heard this is a cult, isn't it? It's a cult. And he kind of like put me on the spot, and I knew all the answers. And how can a tradition that's got that thousands of years behind it, where 1 billion people on the planet follow the teachings of Vedas and, you know, the Bhagavad Gita, how could it be a cult? I knew all the answers, but it wasn't coming out, you know. And here I'm on live television, and it was like 1 second seemed like 12 years or more. Pardon me? No. I just jumped in. You know, that was the arrangement, jump in. So there was no time for any of that stuff. So then, you know, I couldn't come up with the right, just wouldn't come out, you know. And all I could think is, I got to say something. People are watching me. There's, you know, thousands of people looking at me right now. And I said, well, I just kind of changed the subject. I just changed the subject altogether. He said, you know, I'll tell you what happens. I'm walking down the road and someone pulls over and they say, would you like a ride? And I said, well, I'm not taking any rides because I'm walking across the country. And, you know, and a little bit more of that kind of stuff. And I just threw it into the positive direction. And the moderator went, but he went, oh, yeah, okay, all right. So I felt bad about the interview. I didn't answer the questions. I didn't deal with it properly. You feel bad about, you know, and you get a little sensitive when you're on the road for many hours alone. You get very sensitive about many things, you know, but again, in a positive way. So after, you know, we went to a Walmart, myself and my support person. It was the first time we were going to buy some things, some serious things, because I don't like to spend any money. So we went to a Walmart, And at the Walmart was this native guy, and he said, "Hey, I just seen you on TV." Is that, oh yeah? What did you think? "You were great!" So I just felt good that we put it into pause. Another lady, you know, she was with CBC. That means Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. It's a very respectable, the most respectable. If you get coverage with them, you're doing really good. So this was in Halifax. It's on the East Coast. I started on the West Coast first time through. I was almost finished my walk, and those were the days of tape recorders, and she's asking all the questions, and then that translates into, you know, putting it on in the form of, you know, a news item. But anyways, so she asked all the usual questions. So when did you start? Okay, April the 12th. How many pairs of shoes have you worn? 4 pairs of shoes. And how much do you do average day? 42 kilometers or 25 miles. And, you know, things like that. And what's it for? Well, to promote spiritual awareness. And then says, so now that you're almost finished the walk, Swami, what was the greatest experience you have, the most momentous occasion that you had during the whole walk? And again, it was one of those frozen moments. Oh my God. Of course, it was taped and she could adjust it, but I really went still and became quite flabbergasted and said, well, you know, I had to think about it. And yeah, I'm reeling through, going through the provinces I walked through in the days, and nothing really stood out. And I said, well, the greatest thing that ever happened on this walk was, it's right now. It's you. You're asking me this question. I'm answering your question. She goes, oh, yeah, you're like living for the moment. You know? And I say, yes, exactly. That's right. You know? You know? So that's what it was, you know? And there's something to be said about that, because a lot of people do live a lot in the past, you know. I was talking to somebody about loneliness a little bit. Sometimes, because we dwell a little bit too much in the past, you know. And some people are too futuristic. They're too much ahead. Their head's way ahead. They don't have their feet on the ground, you know. Their head's in the sky. And we call that rajagun, when you're going faster than you should be. And tamagun, that's mode of ignorance. The first one is mode of passion. This next one is mode of ignorance, when you're living in the past too much and you're moping and groping, oh, the days were so good and, you know, they're gone now, or I had all this money, but I don't have it now. And forget it. Stop living in the past. Live more in the present. That's called sattvagun, you know, to be thoughtful, living now for the moment, you know. So it was good that these kind of things got brought up, you know. And, you know, we had a lot of fun time with the journalists, and many of them would come and they'd start asking questions, and then they'd kind of put their notepad to the side or whatever way they were recording. And then suddenly they just had a lot of questions about their own personal life. So, in your opinion, blah, 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 blah. And suddenly you're a counselor on the highway, you know, road counselor. It was nice to be in that spot many times, you know. It happened like that. You know, people are, there's a lot of loneliness out there, and the biggest thing on people's minds are relationships. And people would pull over, and they just want to talk. And there are people, they open right, they confess, you know. We're not doing good in our relationship. We're separated. We're talking about divorce. There's kids involved and things like that. That are very gripping in people's lives, you know. And you can't solve all their problems, but you can certainly listen to them for a little bit and try to give them some kind of hope. You know, as a monk, that's our responsibility, to give people some sense of hope, some sense of feeling that, yeah, there will be light at the end of the tunnel. But you got to give them some hope in the direction of spirituality, because whatever physical material arrangements you make, and even though you do the best, try to make the best possible adjustment and manipulation, it's never going to be perfect. So the solution is, it's a spiritual one, you know, spiritual solution to the material problems. So oftentimes it would be a great opportunity to give people a mantra. Here, please try this mantra. the form of a card. Take this with you and use it, and it'll improve your life. There's this one guy, he came to interview me for a newspaper, and he was talking about how he had, you know, that hush puppy dog? Okay, so he once was talking about, this gets very personal, he was talking about how he came home from work, he was in a cranky mood, he had a hard day, and the neighbor's dog was a hush puppy, came at him all, you know, for attention, you know? And what this journalist ended up doing, and he started, you know, it doesn't have anything to do with my story, walking across Canada, but he was just saying, he gave the dog a kick, and next to him was this ravine. And the dog rolled down and became injured for life, you know? So this guy, he felt like in his heart, he was almost crying right in the vehicle with me there. They sometimes invite you into their car. He was practically in tears, you know. This is like a fully grown man. I felt so bad about that. I owed it something to that dog. So I bought two hush puppies and now I'm looking after them. And, you know, so that was his solution to the problem. But, you know, it's time for kind of like, people just want to, it's almost like surgery. They want to, you know, open up and talk to you about their situations and their circumstances, you know, because people are in, I'd say, for the most part, in a lot of difficulty, a lot of challenges, and they don't know how to deal with it and how to cope with it. So the thing that gives you the greatest strength is, you know, the spiritual power, and that's what can help you to, you know, withstand some of these very, very grave, difficult situations and circumstances that happen in people's lives. Okay, so, what else? Okay, we got almost eaten by a grizzly bear, got attacked by, you know, sometimes people wonder, how do you deal with the call of nature? Like you're in, you know, these are like personal questions, you know, and you're in the prairies, which is kind of like our version of your plains, right? The plains, the Midwest, and there's four lanes, no trees anywhere. Not even shrubs. So how do you deal with the call of nature? So they ask those kind of questions. So, you know, I told them, well, you really have to watch how you're eating. You have to watch, you really control your eating and wait for the right moment. And so one time I was dealing with the call of nature and I just, this was in a forested area, and I just hit the wrong spot. I stepped on a wasp's nest. And seven wasps came out on my backside all at once. And I ran. I was telling people I'm doing a walk, but I cheated. I ran for a little bit. So, you know, for several days, I really couldn't sleep well at all. I was very sore on the backside. And, you know, but one thing is that when you're doing these long distance walks, like 8, 9, 10 hours a day, you develop a certain strength and robustness that, you know, you probably have to go to a doctor under normal circumstances. But, you know, I figured I'm not going to do that. I'll just keep walking if anything happens. So if I die on the road, hey, it'll be a glorious death. I'll die a hero. Buddy Bo. I once got attacked. Anybody remember the old 1962 film, the Hitchcock film, The Birds, and how that was like a doomsday version? Does it still come on once in a while, or do you rent it, or no? Okay. So anyways, you know, it's like when the birds, you know, come and attack everyone, and, you know, they just take over, you know? And there's this one scene where the school kids are coming out, and they're, you know, going, trying to get home early. The teacher let them loose early, and I think the schoolhouse is still there, and, you know, you can still, like, as a tourist, go and see it. But anyway, so, and the crow started coming and picking the kids. It was gruesome for 1962. For now, it's nothing. Oh, the people laugh at that. But, you know, this really, I mean, I didn't get birds picking at my head, but they were darting for my head. I really had to dash out there. Birds are extremely territorial. And I really had to run for a few kilometers to get away from their nesting area in the prairie provinces. But it's exciting. It adds a lot of color to your day. And what I really enjoy was to meet a lot of the folks, you know, and you meet all kinds, you know. There was this one group of people, they pulled over. They were from the Ojibwe tribe, and it was Sunday morning. They had a real good Saturday night program, you can tell. And and so they pulled over and said, "Okay, would you like a ride?" And I said, "Well, I'm a monk, and I'm walking across Canada." So it goes like this. "Would you like a beer?" I said, "Well, I'm a monk, and monks don't take beer. At least in our order, we don't." Goes like this. "Would you like a donation?" I said, "Well, that would kind of help out." So he dug down deep. And, you know, we have coins there for, you know, $1, $2. And dug down deep and gave it. And he ran away happy as anything, you know. So, and I'll tell you another very endearing story. I was walking in Northern Ontario where there's this one house and a couple of guys were sipping on beer. I said, "Hey, what's going on? Hey, come on over." And they offered beer. And I said, "Oh, don't do this." But we chatted. We made friends. And then 7 years later, I walked by that house again. It's on the Trans-Canada Highway. And I looked to see, this is the same house, the same people there. So there was a guy, he was cutting wood, he's preparing for the winter. He was taking birch trees and sort of cutting with a chainsaw. And, you know, to deal with that, you have to put these, you know, head things on, you know, over the years, you know. So I didn't want to scare him, you know. And he had his back turned to the road, so I was walking up the driveway. I wanted to see, is that my old friend from before? The guy was sipping beer. So I went around in front of him, and he's cutting wood, and then he sees this two legs. He sees this thing here, throws, and he looks up like that to me, and he takes off his little ear protective things. I said, "Yeah, what's up?" I said, "Well, I just, my name is Bhakti Mark Swami, and I was here back in 96, and I met a couple of guys here who we connected very well. And I'm doing this walk across Canada. It's my second time. And I was just wondering if you were one of those. You were one of the two guys." I said, No. I bought that from those guys. I bought this house from those guys." "But what did you say you're doing?" I said, "Well, I'm walking across Canada." "You're walking across Canada? Let me shake your hand." So then what happened was, so we made friends. Then I came back a few years later, did the third walk across Canada. And I didn't even premeditate on this. I said, "Oh, I'm in the neighborhood. Where is that house? That house where I went twice before. Let's see what happened." So I went. It was 7 o'clock in the morning, kind of early in the summertime. I knocked on the front door. No answer. Ah. So I started to walk down towards the highway from the driveway. And then I heard a door shut, but from the backside. I said, "Oh, it's good." And then I saw this same guy. I could tell by his body size it was him. He had a prosperous frame. And then there was a lady behind him, and she was carrying a baby. And I said, "Hello?" And he turns around. "Hey, how's it going? How's it going?" And then the woman next to him says, "Oh, this is the monk you've been talking about." "Yeah, I'm doing this third walk across Canada. And I said, "Well, yeah, well, here's my wife, and this is her baby. We're just taking him for a little health checkup." And so you see, like, these transformations going on. You know, from one little spot, how things do change. And, you know, they kind of touch your heart when that happens. Here's, like, hospitality. People are genuinely very kind. Truckers will pull over their big operation in the mountains sometimes. It's not an easy thing. Why? To give you a ride, to have somebody to talk to. And, you know, you're interesting. You're a monk, and there's not much in common between a trucker and a monk, I'll be honest with you. To be honest with you, I met a whole bunch of them, you know. But you share the same road. You might as well make friends. You know, they make friends with all kinds of people, truckers, miners, fishermen, businessmen. Here's a businessman. He pulls over. He's from Calgary, and he pulls over. That's like the oil, like Canada's Texas, right? Alberta. So he pulls over, and he says, "Would you like a ride?" And I said, "Well, I'm actually walking across the country to promote spiritual awareness." And I said, "Oh, really? Yeah. Well, you know, I was sort of, you know, I was raised a Christian. I was sort of dabbling with Buddhism a bit, but I was kind of reverting back to Christianity, but I'm not sure about Christianity because there's some really far-fetched stories there. I'm not sure whether to believe them, if they're myth or not. And I said, well, I'll tell you, buddy, you know, you think the stories are far-fetched in the Old Testament? You should check out our stories. They are way out there. And he said, is that right? He said, but, you know, whether you want to believe them to be true or not, it's kind of irrelevant. What's important, it's the message, it's the essence behind the story. And the essence is bhakti. What's that? Bhakti means devotion. Devotion is what we need. Devotion is what fuels you. Devotion is what gives you life, gives you hope, gives you faith. You know, the need, the want, the inner drive, you know. Bhakti is, it's another way of, it's the deepest love you can find. You know, said, hey, I like that. All right. Okay. So, what about other people? They would ask, why are you doing this? And I said, well, it's to make friends, to get inspired by people and to inspire. It's a friend raiser. Yeah. And they say, you're not doing it raising funds for this? You know, it's not a fundraiser. No, it's a friend raiser. Oh, I like that. I like that very much. And that's in truth what it is all about. It's like making friends along the way. And you do meet cyclists the occasional runner. There was one lady, she was on a skateboard going across the country. And one other person on rollerblades and I did in fact almost meet up with a woman. She had MS and she was walking. I don't know if she made it across because she was getting weak, but we actually talked on the cell phones. I had cell phones at the time and I decided I'm not going to deal with this debt. Forget it. And gave up on it after a while. But I did talk to her and she said, Swami. She was like that. She's kind of a dreamy person. Swami, I didn't know it was going to be like this. What are you talking about? I didn't know the walk was going to be a spiritual one. I thought I was coming here to create awareness for multiple sclerosis. But actually, it's a spiritual journey, Swami. I'm having such a good time. And I said, I'm very happy for you. I'm very happy. And I hope you succeed. So, I was explaining to some of the devotees, I think it was yesterday, this one woman, she pulled over and said, would you like a ride? I said, well, I'm walking across Canada. What's it for? And it's to promote Dharma. What's that? Dharma means to get back to basics. It means to get back to a sense of responsibility and duty and do as you're obliged to do. You know, understand your psychophysical nature and connect with that and follow what is you're naturally attuned to doing, you know? And she just kind of held my hand like this. Is that okay? You don't mind. She just held it there. And it was kind of an embarrassing moment because she wouldn't let go. She just kind of closed her eyes. And it went on like that for quite some time. Traffic is zooming by like crazy, you know? And she just held on. And I didn't want to spoil it. I didn't want to spoil the moment. But it's those kind of encounters that stay with you for a long time. Here's another thing that happened in Edmonton, leaving Edmonton and going eastbound. Edmonton is another one of those oil kind of places. And we have what's called Royal Canadian Mounted Police, the most famous police in the world, okay, Mounties. And unfortunately, Disney has the copyright on Mounties. And I don't know. Anyways, those terrible people. But anyways... So there's I'm walking with my support guy because sometimes I'd have a partner and he'd park his car and he'd come and join me for a bit. And we're on what's called the Yellowhead Highway. Maybe you were on it before. And so we hear the sirens, police officers, and coming eastbound and westbound. And this is a four-lane highway, the big median in the middle, right? And one comes, they go high speed, he comes and goes through the meeting, oh, stops in front of us. Another one, oh, stops in, behind us. And I say, well, I don't think they can, I don't know what we're doing wrong, but they can't catch us for speeding, that's for sure. They're just walking. So the guy in the front, he comes out of the cab and he says, don't worry about a thing. We just want to get our picture taken with the walking monk. So they both came out and they got pictures, you know, they took pictures. And, cause it was a little bit in the news, you know, so they just want to, you know, for novelty's sake and, you know, posterity. And so then we start to talk and wrap up a conversation. And, you know, when you see sirens or police cars, you're supposed to slow down. So the traffic is, it's rush hour. Everyone's slowing down. What's going on? And they're just seeing two monks and two police officers just kind of shooting the breeze, yucking it up. Ah, nothing to worry about. Yeah. And then I started to say, you know, in our tradition, which comes from India, like we're supposed, myself and my partner here, we're supposed to be like the Brahmins, you know, like the visionaries and like the holy men, you can say. And you guys are like the Kshatriyas. That's where you kind of fit in. You're the protectors. And like we present the precepts. We give the lessons. We warn people, like we give codes on how to live. And if you slip through the cracks, something's going to happen, and then you guys deal with it, you know? So we're the proactivists and you're the reactivists, you know? And, but I told them that the relationship in the past was that the sadhu and the king, which is where you guys fit in, or the Kshatriyas, the warriors, they were like this in their relationship. They had different mindset, but they complemented each other. They were there to serve and protect the citizens. So when they heard that, they said, that's a great concept. Wish we could have that. So it was just nice to connect with these kind of people, you know. And there was this one time when, you know, when you're walking with robes, it sometimes gets windy and you have to start walking early in the morning. So sometimes the early bird people, they don't know, what's this? It's a ghost, you know. They got the headlights on and this appears white on the, and they, oh, you know, and then they call the police, you know. So there's one, this was in a sort of Mennonite area, and he called the police. And the police found, not me first, but he found my support guy. Said, oh yeah, he's a monk, he's walking across Canada. And this is where Ontario sort of touches with, I think it's Minnesota. Yeah, I think the state of Minnesota. It's just separated by a little river, you know? Canadians and Americans try to get through there all the time, and people warn you, don't bother, you know? It's not what you think it is. You know, they'll give you a hard time, which it was. But anyways, just before crossing that border and getting to the other side of the river, my support person says, Maharaj, the police want to see you in the station when you get up there. I said, okay, nothing to worry about. So I walk into the station, and the guy, he's looking at the brochure that I pass out, and he's kind of leaning against the counter. Okay, oh, so you're the guy. So what's this all about? What's this for? Because I got a complaint. You know, like, he's a character. What's this for? You know? And I'm not just being a dramatist. I'm being, well, what he is. I'm just mimicking what he was doing. Said, well, it's to promote spiritual awareness. What? You know, spiritual awareness in this country, which needs it. You know? So you're talking about, like, it's Hicksville, you know? And they never meet, like, Cronulla people. What to speak of a monk, you know, walking across Canada. So it's these kind of interactions that kind of make your day really fun and exciting. There was a chain of police officers that weren't terribly nice. They were kind of like neutral. So there was this one guy, you know, I was making a long-distance call at a telephone booth in a little corner village, like a little hamlet, and then a police officer pulls right next to me, and you feel a little bit kind of empowered when you're on the road. You have nothing to worry. You're not doing anything wrong. And I decided when I hung up the phone, said, the last two officers were not that nice, so I'm just going to walk by and ignore this officer and see what he says. So I hung up the phone and I walked by his car. He had the window open. And I kind of gave him a look, not polite necessarily, but I'm just going to be neutral, a neutral look. And he says, "How's the walk going? You don't have to look at me like that. I know what you're doing. Here's my card if he needs help at all." Yeah, most of the officers were great. And they give money, they give fruit, and, you know, like, they'd help. They actually help. One guy, he pulled over and said, "So is everything okay?" I said, "Yeah, everything's okay." He says, "So what are you doing?" "Well, I'm a monk from the Hare Krishna." "What's that?" "Hare Krishna." "What's that?" I said, "Well, you know, like the Beatles, they used to sing the songs, you know, Hare Krishna, you know, that sort of thing. I said, "Oh yeah, I heard something about that." "Well, anyways, you're okay." And, you know, so they do check up on you and they're going to be helpful. After all, their lives can be very boring. And when a monk comes into town, it's a big thing. That's another thing. A lot of people in the many traditions, they have this feeling that if a monk comes through your town, it's a very auspicious thing. It brings about good luck. A lot of people have that feeling, and they express it. There was one native town that I went through called Escassoni in Cape Breton Island, which is part of Nova Scotia. And it was a Mi'kmaq tribe. And we had our picture in the paper. It came out as a daily paper on the obituary page, where it's announced that everyone dies. And our picture was in there. And when I say our, I mean me and the super soul inside. Okay, there's two of us there. and a little bit of writing there. So I asked one fellow, "Why is the picture in the obituary section?" "Don't worry, Swamiji. In Cape Breton, everyone reads that page the most. Consider yourself lucky." So, but it was that picture in that page that really did good for us. Because when we walked through this off-the-beaten-path town, population maybe 1,500, I walked by the, daycare center. And a couple of ladies came, "Oh, wait. Here's the article. Your picture's here. Can you sign it?" You know, like this, you know. And then they just, we had something, it started raining, spitting out, and people, you know, and what they did, these ladies, they called everybody, "The monk's coming, he's coming, he's coming by your shop," you know. So people started to come out of their shops, and one guy in his pickup, he came and gave an umbrella, "Here, that's yours." You know, the natives are very good-hearted people. And people came, "Here, donation." They don't have much money, but they really love to give. And then a busload of kids came off and said, "What are you doing?" You know? And I said, "Well, I'm, you know, walking across Canada." "What for?" And then there was this, I came to this general store just to get away from the rain. And there was this little lady. She was white. She was the only white person I saw in the town. And she was kind of like frail. She looked like little granny from the Beverly Hillbillies, you know? And I says, "Oh, you're the fellow that's walking across Canada? Oh, that's wonderful. Would you like anything from the store? You can take anything off the shelf that you like." You know, so I was just kind of, it was a good, you know, she had lots of stuff there, good stuff. And I was just kind of flabbergasted. Again, I was overwhelmed with the hospitality, the kindness, you know. And I didn't know what to say. I ended up not taking anything because I couldn't believe my ears almost. But that's the way it was. And finally, sort of exiting from that town, there was one native man walking, and I sort of gave a wave, and he says, "Hi, how's it going?" I said, "What are you doing?" "So I'm walking across Canada, you know, and it's my second time through." I said, "You're walking across Canada? And you came to our town?" "Well, nobody ever comes to our town. Thanks for coming!" So he kind of like just lit up like that. And people feel kind of blessed in a way, you know? And, you know, it is really a matter of having a very free kind of life. There were times when you're tired, you decide which tree to nap behind, or if there's an abandoned old barn, you know, you sleep in there for a little while, for an hour or so. Or I remember, you know, sleeping, you know, just, you know, my pillow was the rock, and then next to me was this, you know, just because I was so tired and there was no other place, there was like a moose, what was left of him, you know, the bones, you know, right next to me. And I thought one of the best places really to have a rest where no one will bother you is these very old Scottish cemeteries, you know, where nobody ever goes, you know, like they've been, these are like from the 1700s, you know, where the tombstones are like this and half of it's broken off, and you just go in there at one little corner on the edge and you sleep there. No one will bother you. So it's that kind of life. So biggest day walking was 99 kilometers, which is about 64 miles. And that took 20 hours to do that. I was walking along the St. Lawrence River. It was 42 kilometers average a day, which is about 25 miles. Went through 10 provinces. First time around, it was like 5,500 miles. And got to see a lot of people. Went through many, many towns, countryside, mountainous areas, rocks, plains. A lot of adventures. Four pairs of shoes, as I mentioned earlier on. And sometimes railroad tracks. You get tired of the road. You go on a railroad track just for a little change, you know. Or you follow a trail that's in the bush that runs parallel, or a country road. You get off the main road just because it's nauseous and it bothers you after some time. But, you know, if somebody asked me, did you see Krishna when you were on your walk? Or they, did you have any mystical experiences? People ask that. And my answer to them is that, well, every day you definitely see Krishna or the Creator in the form of the elements, in the form of people. You get really close to people. You develop incredible sensitivity. You can, the wind is the breath of the Absolute. The rain is the sweat. The trees are the hairs of the Lord, etc. like that. You start to see chapter or canto 2 of the Bhagavatam coming out, or 11th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. It becomes very real to you then. And you do see it in the form of people with their kindness, you know. And because they were generous, you know. One fellow, he said, when I was a little kid living in Germany, I met a monk and he was so nice to me. So here's a donation. Give me a $100 bill just because I like monks. One monk was nice to me. I got to return the favor, right? So it was like that. Yeah. And people are kind to the point we'll say, well, here we'll give you something so you can have stay in a motel room, which we sometimes did, myself and support person, but we not like to stay inside long. I can remember on the first walk, I'd be very irritable after and restless after being in a room like this for about 40 minutes. Then I say, I got to get up and my legs need to move and I need clear air. You know, you feel claustrophobic after a while, you know, because the world is your home and the road is your lifeline, you know. And, anyways, those are some of the experiences. We were trying to explain to you a little bit the life of a sannyasi. That's a single person. One man, he's 65 years old. He was cycling across Canada. I said, well, it's people like you and me. I'm retired. You're a monk. We can do this. Most people can't do this. They don't have the time. But if you do have the time for this kind of thing, then do it. And if you can't do it now, then do it when you're 65 or before. And go for a pilgrimage, because it really will change you. And of course, while I'm walking the whole time, there's chanting on the beads, the meditational beads, which are here. And for those newcomers, we have 108 beads. We call them bullets, you know. Bullets, you know, against Maya, you know, the illusory energy. And they're all strung on a strand, and on each mantra we say, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. And one more time, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. And one more time, why not? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. So when you're chanting like this, you're taking care of your soul. And when you're walking, you're taking care of your body. So you're killing two asuras or two demons with one stone. Okay? That's a vegetarian version of the killing two birds with one stone. Are there demons? Yeah. But most of the demons are inside. They're not outside. They're here inside. And that's why we chant. When you start chanting, you understand how many demons there are and how big they are. And how ferocious they are. And it's pretty interesting, you know, research work. So, I leave it at that. Anybody have any questions? Yes.
Tell me about your encounter with the grizzly bear.
Grizzly bear, I'll be brief. I explained a little bit yesterday. I was praying to Krishna. I was saying, you know, it'd be nice to see a living bear. I've seen you in the form of a moose, elk, this, that, bison. It'd be nice to see a bear. So a few minutes later, a bear appeared on the road. And he was very close to me and my partner at that time. And what saved us from being toast was this big tractor trailer that came and tooted him off the road. Otherwise, I think we would have had a serious problem. You know, he switched directions to come after. He was after us, but we were very careful. He was curious, and you know they're hungry. And it's very hard to intimidate a grizzly bear. And very difficult. And we knew not to run. We knew not, you know, don't get him excited. Our purpose was to kind of keep things just cool until the right moment. There was no way to escape, you know, too. The road was built up like this. There was a big valley, like ravines on both sides. We were kind of stuck, really. So what we did was, We started to talk a little bit to him. Oh, you're big and powerful and strong. And Namaste Narasimha. Like a mantra for protection, you know? And so we got protected. I saw so many bears on that walk, that last walk that I did. Yes, bro. It takes 6 months to walk across Canada for about 7,800 kilometers. And that's at 42 kilometers a day, average. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. We have in Canada, yeah, once in a while the rainbows come up to Canada. We have called OM festivals. They have more like regional, smaller events like that. Yeah. So we do that. But when I go to those kind of gatherings, I don't walk, I cook. I cook like, you know, pasta and then khichdi and then just alternate it. And then we have like a whole system where we have like a big griddle thing, you know, where we teach people how to make chapatis, the flat bread, and then you put it on there, you make your own fire, and everyone gets a chance to learn how to make flat bread. And so that's great. That's wonderful. I couldn't care for the rave music too much, frankly, but it was... Anyways, they're all nice people. Clothes or no clothes. Haribol. Right. Uh-huh, great. I know you, don't I? Yeah, that's right. That was in Lachwa and Mayapur. Great. Are you ready for another one? Great. Are you single? You're not married? You're bound with children? Oh, married. Oh, that's okay. No, take no offense. Here. Well, how are you? Well, you can be in the play, too. And your name again? Gopal, of course. Thanks, Gopal. He looks like a leading man, doesn't he? Leading man material. Dancer, right? Shiva. Or a Shivite. Shiva follower. Break dance. Can you please come to Mayapur again? To do Sati? Sati. Oh, is that right? No. He always stole my material. Oh, yeah. Oh, I saw a little bit of that, yeah. Okay. Thanks. Yes.
When you were speaking, it kind of occurred to me that, you know, you should slow down a little bit, kind of like get more into the mode of goodness and pure goodness, you know, instead of passion and ignorance. I'm always moving so fast.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So I just wanted to speak a little bit about, of course you've been speaking, but, you know, the importance of, you know, getting into more of a mode of goodness. And, you know, what ultimately you can do with that to, you know, purification, and maybe a little more of a philosophical question.
Okay, I don't know if I'll answer it very satisfactory, but I would just say that, well, like the walks are very much a mode of goodness thing. Like when you run, it's passion, you know? When you're in a bike or a fast car, it's well, passion to slash ignorance, because it can lead to destruction. And that's one thing that kills people probably more than anything else, is we kill each other through the cars. So it makes sense to slow down and to take time, to be thoughtful. As the saying goes, take time to smell the roses, you know? Because like when you're young, you didn't, what's a rose? Well, it's that thing that's in the front yard, dear. You know? It has a smell. Oh, it does? Oh, I never know. Well, because you're going too fast. So slow down. And it's almost like become a child again. Because children, in fact, they do that. They look at everything. If a child was to be here, they'd try to eat this. Right? A baby. They would. They try to eat anything first. It's called, technical term is anamaya. You know, they're in food consciousness. And they look at everything. They'll look at the sky here. So much today, you know. It's interesting what children will do. And everything's exploratory. Now, when you kind of like subdue in your, you know, kind of slow down your pace with this mode of passion, you start to become a child again and start to look at things that you hadn't looked at for maybe a few decades. Hey, this flower is pretty. And you don't have to be a flower child to appreciate a flower. You know? Hey, look at that spider. Look what he's created. That's amazing. That's incredible. It's awesome. It's very humbling. It's actually a very humbling thing. So a whole new world opens up to you that's much more, you know, effective than putting on some glasses and watching some 3D thing on the screen. You know, the real world is out there for you to enjoy. And so, you know, take some time. I once spoke to a group of business students about leadership, and I don't have any inclination towards business, but they asked me to speak because I was a leader of some kind. So, and I didn't say anything too extraordinarily out of the, you know, range of what they usually hear, but I did say, well, I find it very necessary to break from an administrative tasks or, you know, what you are doing, get a little bit out of the rut, unstick yourself out of the rut, and go for a walk. Go for a walk and digest all that's come to you. So I find that walking is really healing, very healing. And as you know the song, somebody reminded me, it was Brahmatirtha. You remember Nancy Sinatra and her song, "These boots were made for walking. That's just what they'll do." You want to sing it? "And one of these days the boots are gonna walk all over you." Okay. So the body was made, designed for this purpose, you know? And we're denying it by the lifestyles that we live. We're denying it. We're saying, I'm not going to do this with my body. We figured out to sit like this and do this, and you're all tensed up because of the traffic. And indeed, it does major damage on your back and in other areas. It creates so much tension. You probably should be seeing a chiropractor or a massage therapist every day of your life by doing so much of this. I know that's your job. That's your bread and butter. Please don't get me wrong. Please.
No worries.
Okay. But, you know, we can balance it with some walking. And yet it's tough at home, dealing with people, dealing with the kids or dealing with parents. It's tough It's tough dealing with the older folks. Very demanding. It's tough at work. It's tough. Sometimes it's tough in the ashram. You're sharing space with another monk or brahmachari, and the guy is, you know, the chemistry doesn't work. So what do? I go for a little solitary moment, a few moments. Go out and just go to the trees by yourself. You owe it to yourself. And just come back with a new view on things. And in the course of your walk, you may have had some interaction with nature, with the elements, with watching animals, maybe even with people. One thing I always find so nice, when you're walking in these kind of robes, it brings special attention. And people, they say and do more than they would for an ordinary person. They'll go out of their way. Hey, you're different. And are you a monk? I said, yeah, I'm a monk. I said, are you really a monk? I'm the real monk. Kids will ask, why are you wearing a dress? Well, because I'm a monk. Oh, you're a monk. Can you teach me? So the whole idea is to walk, slow down, and the best way is to give the car a break. And, you know, in terms of that, I had some MRI scans done a few months ago. Cartilage is wearing down. So like most, you know, extremists with athlete, you know, sports or dance or anything like that, wrestlers, they all have, it's all joints problems that you have. So we're not suggesting you don't, you know, don't exercise, but don't exert too much. So I also have to slow down a little bit. 42 kilometers a day is becoming too much right now. But slow down so you have time to think. Because, you know, the beauty of a person as they mature in life is in what comes up here. It's the intelligence, the experience. Although when you're young, the power is more, there's a lot of creativity, no doubt. That's outletted, but there's also a lot of power in the physical form. But when that power starts to slow down a little bit, then this operation should be more activated, you know, the analyzing things carefully. So we need to slow down, you know, need to take time. On the battle of Kurukshetra, Krishna was telling Arjuna, okay, let's talk for a few moments. Let's think things over. Slow down. The sun's come up. You know, I mean, I'm not paraphrasing. The idea is that when the sun come up, it's time for action. But not just now. We have to talk a little bit first. And then action. So why do we need time to think? So we can act intelligently. If we all took, say, like 5 beats, or maybe 10 beats, 5 to 10 beats, before we say something or do something, you'll save yourself a lot of trouble. Because oftentimes we say things we're sorry to have done. We're so impulsive. So just, someone might throw something at you, you know, harsh words, okay? And say, okay. Need a little more time. And you know, at least you can process what's going on and come up with something intelligent instead of throwing the same negative energy being volleying back and forth. That's a deep topic and go for a long way with it, but if we want to gain insight, then you have to slow down. And insight brings about purification, a cleansing of things. Chanting is so nice. Chanting and walking is so nice. It goes together like soup and sandwich. Like, I was going to say love and marriage. Haribol. Horse and carriage. Other questions?
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, people would. Yeah, I've had different kinds of people pull over and they'll walk for a bit. Like sometimes journalists will come and walk with you for a while so they can experience of the, you know, taste a little bit what you're going through. Tree planters, you know, people like that, you know, the very free spirited kind of people will walk with you for a while. Yeah. Or sometimes people, they're just going through a tough time, said, can we talk for a little bit? So you just kind of sit in the vehicle with them for a little bit and go over what they need to go over. Yeah, that does happen. But in general, people are in a hurry. You'll find that everywhere. They're just in a big hurry. But they'll give enough time to say, how are you? I heard what you're doing. I think it's great what you're doing. Keep up the good work. Or would you like a ride? And, you know. Right, right. Yeah, yeah. It wasn't quite like that. It doesn't work that way. That's a movie, you know? Okay, we're almost there. Okay, so... I'd like to, yeah, but I'd have to do it a little slower. There's highways that I haven't touched yet. In Asia? Well, no, Fiji Islands. I did Fiji Islands. I did half of Israel just a couple of weeks ago, so I'll have to go back and finish it. And Guyana, Trinidad, Ireland, and three times Canada. So I've been thinking about America. Yeah. No, you have to include New York. Come on, you got to. You have to start from the northeast and go, or the other way, you know. Isn't that the way? Well, it's green and gray, and it's wet. They should rename it Inderland. Yeah, there's a bit of that. We have a lot of that in Canada too, but it was very wet. It was, and the roads are very narrow, and there's two lanes. There's no place to walk. There's blackberry bushes almost everywhere at that time when I went, September, and, you know, your clothes get sort of... There's a few... Ireland, this is what happens in wet weather. You're walking in these robes, and the robes get wet, and they sort of, you know, kind of brace around your legs. You know, have you ever had that experience? And then suddenly... And then, yeah, so that happened, and then I had to walk through a town, and the split was like this, like that... And, it was, yeah, it is beautiful, yeah. But I lost about 3 doties through Ireland because of the wetness, you know. People are nice, but when it rains, my experience is people don't stop so much. They just don't stop for rain. They're bothered by rain. If it's a little bit wind, they might feel a little sorry for you, or a scorching hot day. That's another thing. Like, but when it rains, they don't bother. And also I found that a lot of people in Ireland, they, you know, it's kind of hard to interact with them, because even though there's homes, everybody has a hedge and a gate, and it's like, can you guys get out of the Middle Ages or something, you know? Because in America and Canada, it's big, wide open space. You could just walk on the lawn and like that. It's a little different. Fiji was nice. We had a chance to meet a lot of native folks there. You know, fortunately, they don't eat monks anymore. The first monk that came there was eaten. Yeah. And they never saw shoes before, so they took his shoes and they could eat that too. So they put it in the boil. This is a true story. They kept it on a boil water, rolling water, you know. And the shoes wouldn't break down, so they gave up on it. But they definitely had him. Fortunately, there's no cannibalism anymore. But, you know, I was very passionate about wanting to go to one particular village where we could distribute prasad and give them a nice vegetarian meal. We ended up doing that, beating the drums, and even the chief came out and started to... Yes. Somebody else? He had another?
Well, when you're walking, do you encounter people who invite you home to dinner?
Yeah.
If so, do they want to serve you meat?
Well, you make it kind of clear. You do get invited to stay in people's place, and you let them know a little bit what are the parameters. One guy very innocently gave me a paper bag and said, I saw you earlier on. I thought you were very hungry, and it's hot weather. So he gave a paper bag, and indeed there was a big hamburger, juicy hamburger there. I didn't have the guts to say, oh, I can't accept this. You know, he's giving from his heart. It was a display of bhakti, devotion. So let it be. Leave it for the raccoons. All right? People are well-intentioned, you know. Yeah.
What did you do when you thought you were giving up?
Did I feel like giving up? Well, you were talking about Forrest Gump. Okay, there was one time where I had this. It's related.
Okay, the first time I did a walk, I had this issue here with this left foot
where there was kind of like a bone coming out. It was something was dislocated. It's dislocated. So we didn't have the funds or anything. It was in the middle of the mountains. Nothing's open. We're far away from any civilization. And I tried walking with a stick, and it was getting nowhere. So I pushed it like 2.5 kilometers. So that's it, and just lie down. It's getting very frustrated. So anyways, somebody showed me. We stayed in one person's home. I looked at their stack of videos, which is what it was at the time, and it said Forrest Gump. Hey, my support guy was talking about this. You got to see this movie. It's so inspirational. I said, okay, is it okay? So they put it on, they played it for me, and they fast forward scenes that monks shouldn't be looking at, right? And I particularly remember the scene where young Forrest was in his braces, and some bullies came chasing him. And then suddenly, you know, he talks about the braces broke open like a miracle. And he started to run, and he outran the bullies, you know. And that gave me some inspiration to, you know, even though it hurts, go for it anyway. So, you know, with the stick and the cane and hobbling along, you know, finally what happened is that kind of like dislocated area just kind of kicked into place, and woo, Forrest Gump. Here we go. But, you know, after the first month walking, I looked at a map of Canada, and I just finished the mountains. I'm in Calgary, and said, oh, God, what did I get myself into? You know, I've got so much more to do, you know, but I can't pull out now. I can't let down people. I can't fail them, you know. I just got to go on.
You said it was a spiritual, it was a walk to raise spiritual awareness.
Yep.
So how much spiritual awareness did you actually manage? I mean, I just wanted to ask, like, you met so many people. Was there anyone who actually turned it into a devotee or touched base with you after?
That's a little hard for me to say that nobody kind of ran after me. He said, hello, I want to be one of you. It wasn't quite like that. But definitely a lot of people were impacted. And even God brothers, peers, you know, said, hey, you know, I know I need to walk more. I'm doing it. You know, I got inspired. I'd say, yeah, you hear a little bit here and there from people who said, I've thought about things you said, and I thought about what you're doing. And yeah, it comes at little doses here and there, little inserts, little installments of that kind of reporting comes to you. Yeah. So that's very, very encouraging. And, you know, it gets usually reported in the Back to Godhead magazine, which is our regular publication. And many devotees have said, that was very good. Yeah. Gave me inspiration. So whether it's people who are already on the path or not in the path, surely many, you don't really know how many people's lives you touched because you keep moving on. That's the thing. Keep moving on. Would you join me next time? Okay. Okay, great. You've all been thinking about it. Okay. Good. And if it can't be me, you start your own walk. I'll give you some tips if you like. I'll tell you what kind of food to eat. You know, if you want to know. Yeah, a bit of nuts and raw vegetables in wraps, and put some hummus in it and cream cheese if you like, and olives and, you know, good stuff. Oh, it's so good.
It's great.
Oh. And then at the end of the day, you cook something that's a little more substantial that allows you to have a good rest. Yeah. And, you know, I can talk about the hours, what's the best time to walk and how long for, and a little bit the training. So I think we have to eat now.
Could, and we can also, if people wanted to talk to you, you can stay in the room, in the temple room, and speak with you.
Okay.
If you want to have prasadam, everything is ready.
Where's prasadam to be eaten here?
You can go through here, it's in the side porch, and they can eat it here because it's really cool.
Okay, do you all want to go and get something to eat now? And you can come back here and we can ask more questions or tell me about your commitments before we eat. I get the sense from Kalakanta, the president.
They can also, if they want us, they can have a kirtan in here, we can have prasadam, we can
serve outside. I suggest, why don't we eat and then we can see if there's some room for kirtan. Is that okay? All right. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Thank you. So for our new folks, we have, what, you want to take, I guess? Okay.
They're my Krishna love friends.
Oh, nice.